Fanboy Smackdown. Yeah.
Today on Fanboy Smackdown, episode 19, we discuss United 93, a film about the hijackers and the hijacked on Flight 93 that landed in a field in Pennsylvania on 9/11.
Hey, this is Tony, and I have a very, very special guest with me here this evening. Go ahead.
How is everybody doing?
Yep, we've got the president with us. No, actually.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Tony.
Yeah, we're back.
It feels good. Feels good to be back.
How you been, man?
I've been great.
Excellent.
I've been great.
Excellent. Yeah, we have we've held the fort and
You guys have sounded great.
Thank you. We've had some good really times. Good.
Although I must say, we did do a breakfast podcast on the
two girls
on a podcast.
Yes,
and yeah. that was good times.
That was a lot of fun, and it was cool because we didn't talk about movies. That was something different.
Exactly. Yeah, it was really a breakout episode for us.
Yes, it was.
Give us a chance to
stretch the wings a little bit.
The fact that we were two girls also made it very interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I... Well, I'd probably do that two or three more times. Anyway, so what are we talking about today?
Well, I thought we'd maybe touch on a few of the topics you missed. And I think we're going to talk about United 93.
All right.
I was going to say Flight 93, but that was the...
That was the ripoff.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's been a trend of making cheap rip-off movies.
The B-movie?
There was also Trains, Snakes on a Train.
Yep.
Did you see that one?
Yeah. Yep, and it's the same company that's making all these. They did a feature on it on like ABC News or something.
Right.
In the evening. And I was watching, it was very interesting. Somebody was like, you know, that this is wrong, they shouldn't be doing it. I think, do whatever they want. You know, it's capitalism.
It's
if you want to do it, do it.
And you know what? People are going to get fooled by it. Your marketing's not
that good. Yeah, you're a moron.
Your marketing's not that good. You know,
yeah.
Snakes on a plane. How can you get that confused with train? Okay, they rhyme.
Yeah.
But come on.
I mean, it's just low.
Unless you've got a Sam Jackson impersonator on the cover or something.
Which they could, I guess, sue for likeness then.
Yeah.
The product. But, like, it's just low quality. It's no different than the spaghetti westerns in Italy, man.
Sure.
You know, it's the same deal.
Yep.
You know, and I love those movies, you know.
Sure.
They're so bad. It's great.
Yep.
Some of them are.
Well,
the Leonis are masterpieces.
You've got all the B-rate, you know, the B-horror movies, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you know.
So before we get into that, let's talk about the shows that we've done in the past. Now, one of the topics we had in there that I don't think you were a part of was, what kind of movie are you a sucker for? And I think I know the answer to this.
There are a couple, but yeah. I think you definitely know the number one answer.
I think it's boxing.
Boxing movies. Yep. I will always go see a boxing
yep.
movie. And, in fact, I just watched When We Were Kings again last week.
Oh, yeah?
And, well, that's a documentary,
yeah.
but it still qualifies as
sure,
a boxing movie.
Sure, I mean, it's a movie.
Yeah. And, yes, I love boxing movies. I think, for a number of different reasons, I think the primary reason is... It's a sports movie with violence.
Yeah.
That's like kind of the dream movie for me. I
sure.
love sports, and only in a film where you have to beat the living garbage out of somebody can you really explore someone's psyche.
You know, we don't have any FCC regulations.
Well, only where you can beat the living shit out of somebody
do you
get to explore someone's psyche,
yeah.
you know, and their character. And a lot of boxing movies have great character-driven stories.
Well, not only that, but not only beating on someone else, but putting yourself out there to
yeah,
be beaten also.
Right. What does that say about what you're sacrificing or why are you doing it?
Right.
To very different motives for different characters. You know, the character of Rocky does it for entirely different reasons than Jake LaMotta
Absolutely.
In Raging Bull,
yep.
you know? And those movies are kind of contemporaries of each other.
Sure.
And in a more modern sense, the movie Cinderella Man
yeah.
and who that character was versus Hilary Swank in Million Dollar Baby.
Right.
You know, and what she was doing it for.
Yeah, I've seen both of those in not too long ago, and very different takes on the same sport.
Yes. And I love boxing. I went and saw the Sphinx fight I think it was... August, I think.
Yeah.
Sphinx came to town, brought the super middleweight title to town and won. And now that we, you know, if you guys live in New York or Los Angeles or somewhere else, you might have more than one fighter in town, but this is the first time we've had fights in this town in 50 years. We had our first one last year, worldwide title fight. First worldwide title fight in 50 years here, and Spinks lost, but then he was able to get another fight here, and now he won. So we'll see at least one more fight.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, it's St. Louis is a great town. I mean, you know, we live here, we podcast from here.
Yeah.
And it's a great place to be.
And it feels suddenly like when that happens...
We're editing an anthology about the town today.
That's right. It just feels like this town bottomed out in the 80s, you know?
Yeah.
And when you see things like we get the Final Four here and we have good football and baseball here. In fact, tonight the Cardinals might win and go to the World Series.
Yeah, we've got another window open right next to Audacity.
We're watching the game as we speak.
Keeping track of the game. It's
what does it say right there now?
1-1, top of the seventh.
Still 1-1. Okay.
Yep.
But
nobody on base here.
When boxing comes back to a town, or if it can sustain a match and sustain an event like that, it really kind of harkens back to St. Louis of the 30s and 40s.
Sure.
When we were, you know, the fourth largest city in America.
St. Louis was a big town. I mean, a lot of people don't realize just what a big deal St. Louis was in the early 1900s.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, love boxing movies.
All right, we got that. Let's move on a little bit. Do you have any comments about all the celebrity fiascos that were going on?
Not really, except I liked Mel Gibson, and I still like Mel Gibson, but I feel like he definitely has to figure out some deep-seated issues. I don't actually think that he's an everyday anti-Semite.
Right.
You know, like, I don't actually think that enters his mind on a daily basis, but I do think that somewhere, how he was raised and the things he had to deal with as a kid surfaced when he was wasted.
Yeah.
And that he obviously, on some level, harbors those feelings in some place, you know.
I mean, it's not like, you know, I mean, we drink here on the show. I mean, it's...
Yeah, but...
We've been pretty drunk
on
the show,
like,
too, but...
Those damn Canadians. Yeah. Well, I'm from Canada, so I can say that. sorry, Chris and Liz. I was born there, I can say it, right? Is that okay? Don't kill me. Anyway, yeah, I mean, he obviously has some real issues to work out. And I think the thing that really disappoints me more than anything about it is that it does taint passion, because passion...
Well, it taints everything he does. I mean...
I don't know about that.
It does throw
The passion was accused of being anti-Semitic.
Yes, it was.
And when I went and saw it, I was like, well, this is what we read at church, you know, because I'm Catholic. So I was like, all right, big deal. Who cares? There's no anti-Semitism in this movie. Now, hearing what Gibson said, now I got to take another look at that movie.
Sure.
And decide whether or not that's true.
Yeah.
And that's sad, because that's a good movie.
Yeah.
So, other than that, none of it really bothers me. It's just right. that I thought Gibson, he is a good guy. I just think he's not what I thought he was. You
yeah.
know, he's not as illustrious as he used to be.
Yeah. So. True.
But I still go see that Apocalypto. That looks like a good movie.
That's interesting. I'm curious to see how that one's going to play out. Let's see. Next, I think the other one, you actually, everybody missed that one. I did that one on my own. That was the very special.
Oh, yeah. And I really like that, man.
Thank you.
And I never even really thought of it like that. But
you know,
you're absolutely right.
It's, you know, and the farther we get away from it, the more I've heard people call it September 11th, 2001. It's not as many people are calling it 9/11. It's still there. It's still prevalent. And you know, the more I become educated about it, it's not so much a concern of mine anymore.
Yeah,
and it's become less of a concern. When he was 1 year, when he was, you know, on his first birthday, when I wrote that, it was a concern. We were only 2 years away from it,
right?
And it was his first birthday, so it was very real and very raw for me.
Well, I know how you feel because I was born around Christmas, and 2,000 years later, instead of my birthday, they're still talking about this Jesus guy.
Yeah, I know.
So,
it's like, what a rip.
Yeah, it's like my birthday gets overshadowed every year. So I totally hear where you're coming from.
The tree is for my birthday, not that 2,000-year dead guy.
No, I'm sorry. Love this. Anyway, no, but I see what you're saying.
I've seen the IP addresses, and he's a fan. He listens.
He's a fan. Jesus.
We're good.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah. Between him and the genie.
He said cut down on the cussing, though. Yeah. I think is what he said. And the drinking.
The drinking. We're not drinking, but if you are getting this show through the feed, I want you to take a look at the picture that we've posted. We had to get a little creative with our rigging. We have the microphone rigged up to a bottle of bourbon. Now, what this means is that we can't drink. But we are imbibing water this time, and if we do record a little bit longer, we may have to take apart our microphone setup to get a drink. And I'm winging it right now because the other Tony had to step away for a moment. He's pulling some food out of the oven. He's baking. Yes, actually, he's not baking. Karen's baking. We're just taking it out of the oven for her. What do we have, sir?
We've got King Ranch chicken tonight.
King Ranch chicken. Sounds great. I wonder if she's going to get any. I wonder if she's going to get any of it. I'm just kind of winging it here. So, let's see. The next episode would have been what? I'm dying. I'm hitting dead air. You need
dead
to cut
air.
A bit. Dead air. I think
the genie
needs to save my ass. Well, the way I survived without you is I had somebody to talk to. Well, let's see. It's still the top of the seventh, two out. And the screensaver kicked on. So what do we got here? 1-1. Nothing going on. And I forgot what the other show was.
All right, we're good.
Yeah, let's see. Then there was episode 16, which was the Metacast, where I just kind of BS my way through. And played a couple of audio comments from the shows that Julie and I did, and that brought us episode 17, which was wedding movies.
Yeah,
and now you're back. You can.
That's right. Wedding movies. Comments. Deer Hunter.
Deer Hunter. Yeah,
that's my wedding movie.
You know, I haven't seen it yet. I've got it at the house. I got it from Netflix, but I have not had a chance to check it out yet.
Well, Tony, I'm telling you, you really got to see it. Because Christopher Walken is in it, man, and he's crazy. He's totally wild.
I have no clue who I'm talking to from one end to the next.
Oh, yeah, you know, what he likes to do in the movies is usually play a bad guy. But in this movie, he plays, you know, kind of a crazy good fella. It's pretty wild.
So he's playing the same role he always plays in every movie.
Well, except that he's not bad.
Well, he's not, yeah, well.
You know.
He hadn't fallen into that niche quite yet.
No, not yet. He actually won Best Supporting Actor for that.
Really?
Deer Hunter, yeah.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And now he's reinvented himself again as a comedian.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty funny.
He's been working on that for a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, I think his roles on SNL
More cowbell?
More cowbell, yeah. you say tomato and I say tomato.
Yeah.
You ever seen that? His opening.
I probably have. I'm just not remembering it.
He's basically like apparently a good dancer.
Oh yeah.
And he did this little number. He's out there dancing with his top hat, and he's reading the cue cards of that.
Oh, yeah.
Song. You say tomato, I say tomato, and he's like, you say tomato, and I say tomato, 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 potato, potato. And then Jimmy Fallon comes out, and he's like, whoa, 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 whoa! You're reading the cue cards wrong. He's like, all right, You say tomato, and I say tomato. Tomato, tomato. Whatever. Nice. All right. Is everyone still there? That's good.
We've killed the show.
We'll move on.
10 minutes back together, and it's done. This is the final episode. No,
glad I came back for the finale.
Yeah. That was a special guest appearance for the finale. No, we're just kidding. Let's see. Then last week I posted the Archon Joe, and Archon was a lot of fun. Had a good time.
Yeah, man. You got to sit on several major panels.
Five. I actually was on 8 panels. 5 of them were strictly devoted to podcasting.
Yep.
And that was very cool.
So see, you guys are talking to experts.
Yeah.
We are officially, Archon, are we officially experts in our field? Well, I'll say you're an expert.
Archon said I was. Well, Archon gave me a press pass.
That's awesome.
That was cool.
That's wild.
Had a little ribbon that said press. People listened to me.
That's right.
Or actually expected me to listen to them. I think that was more what it was supposed, how it was supposed to work.
Yeah, yeah. So did you get a lot of questions you had to field and that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all of the panels that we did for podcasting are available online. There's a special feed that was set up by the Fear the Boot guys, which those guys are really cool.
And you're going to be doing a crossover show with them very soon.
I think we might. Yeah, we're in the planning stages of that.
All right.
I'm doing what I think is tentatively being titled Fear the Smackdown.
Fear the Smackdown.
Yeah.
I like that. I almost want to change our moniker exactly. Right now.
Exactly. So we're in talks right now. We're still kind of trying to figure out how it's going to work. But they're a gaming podcast, basically role-playing tabletop gaming. And we're trying to, you know, figure out how exactly we're going to work it, what we're going to discuss. Obviously, it's probably going to be a discussion about movies and games.
Right, but how they're related.
How they're related and how they become more related. And I'm sure we'll have a couple of specific movies we talk about, but we're still trying to figure that out.
I think Star Wars will work its way in there,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, I'm
at
sure
some
it
point.
Will. I'll figure out a way to get it in there. And then,
what about the Philadelphia action figures? I think that's a good topic for a game
yeah.
movie crossover.
There you go. That was another SNL skit.
Yeah, I love that one. The little Denzel Washington pulls up in like the missile launcher.
Yeah. We talked. Actually, I managed to sneak podcasting in on almost every panel I was at.
That's good.
It was pretty cool.
I'm sure you mentioned our name.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Shameless press.
I was in the audience of 2 or 3 panels and managed to turn the conversation around
into
podcasting at one point or another.
Have you guys ever listened to the SmackDown?
That's right. That's right. Movies. If you want to talk about movies, you should come listen to
the SmackDown.
That's right. So, well, and then what's really interesting is to meet the people that just absolutely don't know what podcasting is.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, we're kind of an insular little world, and you know,
right.
we've got the same people listening to us who have come to us from other podcasts. But
I it's really interesting
to
those old guys in these news programs read these cue cards, and McLaughlin's like, "You can now listen to McLaughlin Group on your podcast." Like, he doesn't even know where the emphasis on the word is.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. It's, what's really funny to me is to talk to some of the authors who have been in the business for a while and some of the new ones. Because ones who've been in the business a while, they're kind of freaked out about podcasting and giving stuff away.
Right.
It's like you talk about podcasting, they're like, oh, great idea. I'll read one chapter.
Right.
And let them get one chapter. And that's what I will podcast. I will podcast one chapter. It's like, no, that's not really the idea.
I think what's interesting about that whole phenomenon
But then you have the younger authors who are like, brilliant. You know, I can't get an audiobook contract right now.
Right.
So this is a way that I can get this
out. And there are some great free books out there, man.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
We are going to podcast our anthology.
Yes.
Of all the local writers when we get it done.
So look for that, everybody.
And probably everybody who was on Patio Books had their ears ringing the weekend of Archive. Because I was talking up so many different books, so many different podcasters who were authors who are podcasting their novels.
That's good, man.
It's, you know, it's an exciting medium, and it needs to grow. The Fear the Boot guys had the right idea. Their idea was to get podcasting to a group of people who weren't familiar with podcasting.
That's cool.
Gamers, being that the common ground there was their gaming podcast. They're going to a convention that features gaming. So
right.
let's get the two worlds together and get some of those gamers listening to podcasts through a gaming podcast.
That's pretty cool.
Using it as a gateway drug into podcasting.
Right, into podcasting.
Really, I mean, that's kind of the idea. And Patio Books is just a great example for fiction readers, which, I mean, we have a lot of readers that are at Archon, science fiction and fantasy readers, which, you know, it's a stereotype. It's a valid stereotype that science fiction and fantasy readers are going to probably be podcast listeners. They're probably going to be on the geekier side.
Yeah.
You know, so that the authors, the science fiction...
We say this as if we're not geeks.
If they've listened to any two shows in this, they realize just how big geeks we are.
I know. It's good stuff.
It's, not me. I like boxing movies.
Hey, we are watching the baseball game in the other window. But, you know, Is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's done.
Yeah, he's taking a call.
You want me to store it? I'm talking to my girlfriend. Just put it in the fridge?
We'll just get
okay. Started. Okay, yeah, no, it's all good. Alright, I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Smell like King Ranch chicken.
That smells pretty
good.
Good
stuff.
It does smell pretty good. But yeah, I mean, we fielded a ton of questions. And just had a really good time introducing people to the world of podcasting. Met a couple of different writers, and one of them got into talking with her boyfriend, and I think I may have talked him into doing a podcast.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, it's such a cheap and easy thing to do.
You know, the barrier for entry to do this is minimal. I mean, look
you
at
have
the
to have a computer.
Yeah, you have to have a computer. And you have to have a microphone.
Yeah.
Though
the microphone can be attached to any inanimate object.
Like a bottle of bourbon.
Right.
And or an animate object if you've got a slow-moving dog or a lazy cat.
That's a good point. Or a plant that just really likes to stand still.
That's right. So we had a great time talking about podcasting and made a lot of connections. And I know that there were a number of people who I met that weekend that have since listened to the show.
Great.
So it's really cool. It's
been a great networking opportunity.
Definitely.
We've widened our audience. And plus, you got to talk about something you loved.
Absolutely.
Sounds like you had a great time. Yeah.
I was wiped out Sunday afternoon. I was falling asleep at 8 o'clock. But
wow.
You know what? Yeah.
Knowing you, that's amazing.
That was pretty amazing, yeah. I was at mom and dad Sunday evening. It was just like, oh, I can barely stay awake. But yeah, we had a great time.
That's
good.
Had
a really good time. And yeah, we've already got a bit of a show going.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Wow.
So let's jump into the hot topic.
That's right. United 93.
All right, I've been talking for a minute. Why don't you give us a setup?
Basically, United 93 is an attempt to recreate the events of that day, 9/11, as seen through the eyes of air traffic control in Virginia. Well, I don't know the specific name for it off the top of my head, but basically they monitor all flights in and out of the United States. It's kind of a national security / economic nationwide net, keeping an eye on every plane in the U.S. airspace. It is also seen through the eyes of the pilot and crew of Flight 93 and through the eyes of the terrorists who board Flight 93 and attempt to crash it into either the K-2 Capitol Building or the White House. And for anyone who doesn't know exactly what happened on that day, United 93 was one of four planes that went into, two went into the towers, one went into the Pentagon. The last one was supposedly hijacked back by the crew and passengers, and they subsequently tried to gain control of the plane and land it, but instead they forced it down into the ground and saved either everyone in the White House or everybody in the Capitol building or whatever target they had chosen.
Right.
So very brave people. Even if they didn't actually do that, maybe the terrorists decided not to go through with it, or some people believe it was shot down. Whatever the case, they were very brave people for having to live through that. And from the cell phone calls, which is what a lot of the movie is based on,
right,
there was a plan to take back the plane.
Yes.
Whether or not that happened or not, we don't know, but they were plotting to take it back.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, that's pretty, I mean, there are facts that are uncontrovertible. I mean, nobody questions certain facts in it.
Right.
Then there are a number of questions that can be raised by it. One of the things about the movie that actually, I think it helped it in some ways and hurt it in others, is they really didn't make any assumptions.
Right.
It didn't take that final step. There is no spoiler moment.
That's what I really liked about it.
If you've looked at any information about what happened, anything we talk about here is not going to spoil the movie for you.
The biggest assumptions they make are how the terrorists were able to captivate the crew with a poor man's fake bomb,
right,
made out of a car battery and some wire.
Yeah.
That's the biggest leap, I think, that's made. Because you could say, well, how do you know they did that? No, it's just an idea of how they would be able to control a large group of people, you know, with four hijackers.
Right, right.
You know.
And that was interesting, is that it wasn't, I mean, you see these movies all the time where there's a hijacker that takes over the plane. There's like 15 guys that
right.
end up being part of the hijacking team.
Right.
I mean, this was four guys.
Yeah.
That was it. I think for me, and you know, I'm going to go ahead and say it right now, get it out in the open.
All right.
I was not impressed with this film.
Okay.
I know that there are a lot of people who are probably throwing their iPods.
Now you said
right now.
You said you saw it on a regular screen, right? You did not
did.
See it in
I
the
saw
movies.
It, I saw it at home.
I think that might have had a lot to do with why you weren't as impressed.
It could be. I'm a firm believer that how you view a film can shape what your enjoyment of it.
Yeah.
I know there's some movies that I will absolutely drop everything and go to the theater to see because I want to see it on a big damn screen.
Yep.
Superman was that way. I had to see that on a big screen. If I'm going to watch that movie for the first time, I want it to be huge.
Right.
You know, a drama, a romantic comedy, I don't really feel the need as much.
Right.
Because there's nothing about it that is larger than life. That needs to be that big.
There's something about United 93 that's different almost, though, than me wanting to see a science fiction picture on screen. And I think it's the feeling of being with a group of people in seats in a enclosed atmosphere watching this on the big screen, which makes it feel like a similar environment. And then you're seeing it on the big screen,
right?
And all of the shaky camera angles all over your face make it feel very much like a physical experience of being in a seat, you know, in the dark, watching this thing go on with all these other people also sitting in the same direction, faced the same way as if you were on an airplane or something.
Right.
It was conducive to a good viewing experience for an airplane movie, you know.
Well, that makes sense.
Which really worked in its favor. I never really thought about that until just now, but I'm going to guess so go see all Airplane movies in the theater because it really like blew me away.
Well, I mean, I guess the same could probably be said for submarine movies then, too.
Something
where you're in enclosed space and you've got that added feeling of not knowing what's behind the walls. And
right.
You know, this movie just really didn't do it for me. It felt like Unsolved Mysteries. It just...
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but...
I was just waiting for Peter Graves to say, and after the commercial break... We're going to see how... And it was like... It just didn't feel like...
I will admit that cheap. When terrorists board the plane and the music goes... That really gave away a lot of the intensity, you know?
You know what?
That didn't really happen, everybody.
Yeah. There's not a lot of suspense. I mean, you know what's going to happen. It's like Titanic. You know, there's... The boat's going to sink. I mean, you know the plane's going down. You know...
My heart was really tied up in it, though. I could have cared...
feel anything for it.
Really?
I didn't... Because I'm one of those people, and we're probably going to lose some people over this, and that's fine. This is my feelings. I'm kind of a skeptic about the day. I'm a skeptic about the events of what happened.
How so? In what capacity is, I guess, what I'm saying. What about
it? There's a long period of time from the time that they knew that planes were being hijacked and that plane was off course until that plane went down in a field. There was a considerable length of time, more than enough time, for an armed fighter jet to have intercepted that.
But does that change anything about the day?
Not the day specifically, but the events surrounding...
The movie?
The movie, what happened on that flight. You know, and I'm not saying that that's the way it went down.
See, but the reason that didn't bother me was because taking back the plane only took place in the last 20 minutes of the movie.
And the events, as they
happened throughout the day, for all of us, were chronicled in that film.
Yes.
And the intensity and all the emotions I felt on that day came back. And that the last 20 minutes of whether or not they took the plane back to me was really just a coda to what the entire film was about.
And see, the last 20 minutes for me is when I was totally it totally blew the rest of the movie for me. Because I was actually kind of getting into it until then.
But you're going in with the assumption that it was shot down.
No, not really.
Okay.
I mean, in my mind, one of three things happened. Until some magical revelation gets made or somebody releases some documents, we'll never really know what happened.
Right.
Either they did take over the plane and there was no way they could have pulled out of whatever happened, or it just went into the ground. Or the terrorists knew that these people were breaking in and instead of letting themselves be captured, they ditched. They drove it into the ground.
Right.
And the people were actively trying to get in.
So they just dive-bombed it, which is what the movie shows.
And that the movie shows that, but they show that maybe that happened. Maybe they were trying to pull out. You weren't really sure how that was going to go.
Well, whatever the case, though.
Or it was shot down.
There were things, though, that...
The problem I had, though, was the last 20 minutes. If you're making a film, okay, you're using dramatic elements. I mean, yes, I know this is a real event, but you still use dramatic elements to tell a story. They didn't. They could. They had the perfect opportunity to go back to the command center and show the reaction of the people trying to do something. And they didn't. They left the last 20 minutes on the plane.
It gave it this
surreal sense of being there and not being able to escape. But at the same time, there was no suspense built because nothing took you away from it to make you anxious about what was going on.
But that didn't happen in... They didn't know about United 93 until it was in the ground. They were tracking another one that they thought was a suspect plane. It was an American Airlines flight. It was not a United flight.
I thought it was a United flight.
No, it was an American Airlines flight bound for Buffalo or something. And they thought that it was off course, and they were tracking it. Meanwhile, the fourth plane was United 93. By the time they realized AA was not the plane they were looking for, United 93 was already in the ground. If I remember correctly, that's exactly how the movie went, and that's what the commission report said. But if you don't believe the commission report, I mean, then it's not going to make a difference.
Right.
The point of the movie, to me, was just to forever capture that day without the being encumbered by all of the theories, all of the political spin that has happened since that day in this country, whatever side you're on.
Yeah.
And it's just to memorialize what we went through on that day and what those through. And I think it effectively does that. And that's coming from a person who believes we were attacked, doesn't necessarily believe that United 93 was either shot down or taken back, but as an American, I don't really think it matters.
Right.
It doesn't change anything for me about that day.
Yeah.
And that's how I approached it. You know, there were things in the plane where I was like, well, how would they know that? Or why would they think that? And I questioned it. Even one little detail that bothered me, one little detail that really brought me out of the moment for some reason was how every person who picked up a cell phone said the exact same, like, first line, which kind of bothered me. Mm-hmm. But maybe they said that. I don't know. There were things that were flawed about it, but
I
thought
cell phones
that,
could work.
Well, one, they had plain phones.
Well, yeah, and they showed people on cell phones too.
Yeah, but cell phones can work, I think, after a certain altitude. You can't use cell phones like taking off or landing because they'll interfere with whatever.
Right.
The gizmos.
Yeah.
But for me, it really just kind of captured that day well. And that's, you know, from now on now, that story is always going to be told from a different perspective rather than just a chronological, you know, documentary style event based.
Yeah. You know, it still just felt like a cheap reenactment, a cheap television reenactment to me.
Yeah.
And there were flaws in, at least I felt there were flaws in the sequence of events that I just didn't understand. I didn't understand how all these people were just listening to one guy with a box cutter. Yeah, he had a bomb. But, you know, for all these people to cave immediately and then to suddenly be empowered and rush back. Plus, I didn't understand, another thing I didn't understand is why the terrorists didn't do more to secure these people. I mean, they just kind of left them.
But you're kind of saying, you know, as if it was a story being told.
But they did. But see, that's just it. They used dramatic elements, and they did try to tell a story.
One thing that I think it was important was, historically in these situations, it's always been a ransom scenario.
Right.
So they had no reason to believe that if they didn't cooperate, or if they did cooperate, they would be freed at some point, because they thought that they were going to be, you know, ransomed or something, and there would be a standoff at the airport or something to that effect. Once they learned, through cell phone conversations, that these planes were being flown into buildings,
right,
that changed the mood of about 60% of that group, and that was enough to push forward and try to take back the plane.
And see, again, these guys who took over the plane were trained. They trained on the planes. They trained how to take them over.
Yeah, but
why didn't they shut off those airphones?
I don't think they knew.
They knew that those phones were there.
How would they know?
They rode on planes. They had to ride on planes to get to the country.
Yeah, but I mean, I've never ridden on a plane with an airphone. Ever.
Not that you were aware of.
I don't know. I mean, I've been sitting there and there's no airphone. You know, I mean, phones behind the seats or whatever.
Right.
No, I mean, another thing is they knew how to get on the plane.
And they knew how to fly the plane.
Well, one guy knew how to fly the plane.
Okay.
One guy was trained at an American school. I think it was in Minnesota or whatever.
Right.
How to fly the plane. So he was trained to fly. The rest of them knew what they could sneak onto a plane without getting confiscated. They read all the guidelines on all that and everything.
It just seemed like there were a lot of things that they could have done a little bit better job to explain why this stuff.
To me, it's like any real theater of combat. Nothing ever goes as planned.
No.
And I just kind of assume that,
No, it's just, they tried to fill in the gaps, and there were certain gaps that I didn't think were filled. At least not sufficiently.
Not adequately for the purposes of the film, saying, yeah.
You know, I realize that a lot of this is clearly documented, that this is exactly the way things happen. And I can't, you can't.
Well, I would have to agree with that. What happens inside the plane is largely subjective, man.
Yeah.
That's where all of his storytelling had to occur, because everything else was just, basically a newsreel.
Right. Right. And the guys in the control rooms, they know what they did and didn't
right.
do. Or at least
right.
they, I'm sure.
And it's all on record.
Right.
Right.
Well, as much of the record of the events of that day, I'm sure everything from, 5 minutes after things started happening, they locked things down. So that wasn't a big deal. There was a couple of moments in it that I wasn't aware of that were just pretty chilling. And the one that really sticks to my mind is when they were listening to the audio, and I think it was of Atta, and they went back and listened, and the guy was listening to the tape and heard planes.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty chilling, where
yeah.
it was like they finally realized that holy
they have more
crap,
than one, and they didn't know how many.
Just one, yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, there was a lot of things in there that was informative. And, maybe it was creative storytelling. I doubt it, considering the people involved. A lot of the stuff, and unless you go really dig deep and find out, you just won't know. This is one of those things, though, and, there's a lot of people that are going to take what happened on the plane as gospel.
Right.
And I don't know how appropriate that is.
Well,
it's like with any movie about a
historical event.
Yeah.
There is going to be some fudging on the facts.
Yeah.
But it's as close to a direct recreation that we can have given the information that we have,
mm-hmm.
or the information they'll let us have, depending on what kind of opinion you have
exactly
about the event
day. I don't want anybody to take this the wrong way. If they took that plane over and they forced it down, or they forced it away from the hijackers and it just happened to go down, or they were actively trying to take it out, take it over and the hijackers forced it down, that was an amazing heroic thing.
Oh, I really wasn't.
Did that.
My comment wasn't directed toward you, more toward an audience of people that surf the internet.
Because,
people that surf the internet, the kind of conspiracy theories that exist about that day live on the internet, and I would hate to isolate an audience that, where I personally believe we were attacked, but somebody else might not want to go see this movie if they think it's a big patriotic event. It's not. It's just a documentary about what happened. It's not a documentary. It's like a docudrama.
Yeah.
And whether you think we were attacked or not, you should see it. It's one spin on what happened that day.
Yep.
And there will be many more.
Right.
But it wasn't actually directed toward.
No.
No.
I know that. But I wanted to throw it out there because my take on it is of the three things that happened, as far as I'm concerned, if any of those three ways had happened, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
I grew up in a military household, if it really happened that way, that a military jet had to shoot that down and
Rumsfeld even said
civilians,
at a conference that
if that were to
it
happen
was shot down.
Yeah. What?
He did. He
I
said it.
That.
And they basically said that he was referring to something like if it were to have to be shot down or something, but he slipped and he said when it was shot down.
Oh, okay.
And he was supposed to say if it was to be shot down or something like that. I don't
know.
I missed
that one.
But that was interesting to me. And I was like,
Now, and see, my take on it is, I grew up in a military family, and it's one of the horrors of war. innocent people die. You know, mommies and babies and grandmas and grandpas. I mean, people die.
Well, the theory on shooting a plane down is you'd want like 70 people to die instead of like 3,000.
Yeah,
you know, or something, or
because God only knows. God only knows where they were headed with that.
Right.
Plane. I mean, at that point, I guess they had the vague idea that it was headed back towards D.C.
Yeah, and if it would interrupt the political leadership structure of this country, then it would be a huge deal. You know?
Yeah, and really, you know, for all the life lost on that day, at that point already, all the life lost. How much more of an effect would the images be of a plane in the White House?
Yeah, you know? Yeah, it would be. That would more be psychologically devastating,
exactly,
than an attack on the Pentagon. And I think maybe nothing for New Yorkers could be more devastating than the WTC, but I think nationwide, an attack on Washington would have been just devastating.
And
War
really
of 1812,
though,
devastating.
Yeah, what's phenomenal, though, is just how dramatically the skyline changed also.
Yep.
I mean, it's something you never really thought about until you see it, until you saw it after the fact.
I really, you know, since we have this little public forum where we get 100 listeners a show,
hey, you know,
I really would like to say for the record, I think we should just rebuild a bigger World Trade Center. I don't know why we have to put a funeral pyre there. Why can't we just build it bigger, better, and say, hey, you want to take it out? You're going to have to take it out 15 times, because every time you take it down, we're going to rebuild it.
Freaking mount gun turrets on it.
That's what we should do. It seems silly. No,
I don't agree with the gun turrets. I was just speaking off the cuff.
Well, no, I didn't mean I agree with the gun turrets, although some gun turrets might be nice.
Yeah.
But
maybe some hidden missile silos just outside of town.
But for real, I mean, it's like if every time a disaster happens, we build a funeral pyre there and we never use the ground again, man, that's just going to destroy this society.
Yeah.
I think from perspective of both the practical aspects of you know, business, and from the psychological aspects of if we're a wounded nation for all time over events like these.
I mean, we're going to have to write off New Orleans. We're going to have to write off Oklahoma City. We're going to have to write off New York City. After this past weekend, we're going to have to write off part of Hawaii.
Right.
So, I mean, and that's just silly. You know, yeah, bad things happen, but It's how we stand up to him. Boy, this one has completely changed directions, hasn't it?
Huh?
We've completely gone in a different direction with this.
Oh yeah. Well, I didn't. I mean, this movie lends itself to these kind of conversations, though. By the way, I'd also like to say if people who are listening to this aren't into the news cycle on a regular basis, the Woodward books are very good. The Bush at War, Plan of Attack, and now I'm reading Bush at War 3, The State of Denial. The Woodward books are excellent. They're for people who have a good reading level, but they're not you know, superior reading level. Anybody can pick these books up and read them. They read like a story. You know, they're filled with facts about all the people that are running this war,
right?
And how these decisions came about. And you can just say, well, do I trust Woodward or not? But, you know, he broke the Watergate scandal and he put a Republican president, you know, out of commission. So that's good enough for me, you know, as far as his neutrality goes. So it's interesting stuff.
Yep. Well, I think we've got to just about talk this one out.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's
any final thoughts? I didn't mean to take up with the Woodward thing. But
No, it's a good it's a good point, and it's a different thing, you know. It's this, you know, and I don't want to cheapen it this way. This kind of harkens back to some of the stuff we talked about in the Da Vinci Code, in that, you know,
does it matter?
Look it up for yourself. You know, follow things up. Do the research if it's something that really interests you. Research it from more than one source. Don't take one source of anything for your news, for your information. You know, as great as the Encyclopedia Britannica was, you know, it was written for the most part at least 30, 40 years ago.
Right.
You know, when computers were the size of buildings. It's be open-minded and keep your eyes open to what's going on. Don't just take everything from one source. This is a film. It was at its base, it was meant to entertain and it was meant to make money.
Right.
If it was something more prestigious than that, it would have got buried on PBS.
Probably.
If it was more high-minded than that, it would have been something that would have ended up on the Discovery Channel or History Channel or.
And it may be more high-minded than that, but it's really up to the viewer to make that decision.
Well, and it was up to the studio to release it the way they did.
Right.
You know, it was up to somebody.
Although I must say, there wasn't a lot of press about that film at all. I mean, when it came out very quietly and it left very quietly.
I wouldn't say that.
Really?
I wouldn't say that. I think there was enough press about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I remember, I was like, when's that one movie coming out? And somebody was like, it's opening this week. And I was like, are you kidding me? I haven't seen a single ad about it.
I mean, I think there was probably as much fanfare about that as there was with Oliver Stone's flick. I mean,
World Trade Center.
Yeah.
Which I saw a lot of spots for, though.
Did you see that one?
No, I didn't. It looked really cheesy to me. Now, I love Oliver Stone. I love JFK.
Yeah.
And I think that for all time, JFK will be one of those great American conspiracy movies.
Oh, yeah.
But I think World Trade Center, for me, after seeing 93, I thought, I don't really need to see another movie about this.
And the way Oliver Stone is for me, there's only a couple of movies of his that I've really seen, because when I see a movie of his, I get kind of turned off by him in general and
really?
Just walk away.
Did you like JFK?
I've not seen the whole thing.
Man, it's really good.
Yeah.
Although,
I need to sit down and watch
that's
the whole thing,
coming from a person who didn't live at that time. Like, and you
neither.
Didn't. Well, no, but I'm audience-wise. I mean, some of our listeners are older. Sorry, Tony. Yeah. Didn't mean to say that you were born in 1951. But as the genie revealed recently on an episode, you know, JFK apparently was having an affair with Marilyn Monroe.
Right.
We just found this out.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, they lived through the events of that day, and they might have different ideas about it than the Stone movie, and they might feel that the Stone movie cheapens that day. Which is how I might feel about a 9/11 conspiracy film.
That's true.
Whereas I can watch JFK and go, wow, that's cool. Yeah. You know, because I wasn't alive.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, the one Oliver Stone flick that always comes to mind for me is The Doors. And,
oh, really?
And, you know, it's like, it was a freaking 2-hour-long music video that he might as well have just, you know, wanted to do all kinds of, you know, bizarre sexual things with Jim Morrison.
Really?
Because he was just in love with the guy.
Well, Morrison was one of those crazy figures, though, that did all that kind of stuff, right?
He did all kinds of weird stuff, but the thing was...
So it's a pro-Morrison, it's like it's, Morrison was a poet,
man.
Morrison was, you
was
know...
Was a poet warrior,
a genius.
God. I mean, he was. I mean, he was just like, God, you know? And, I mean, the fact is that I love The Doors. You know, I really do.
Doors are great.
But The Doors made B-grade music with C-grade lyrics by a wannabe poet who was a drug addict.
He was a wannabe poet. But you know what?
Really was.
Their following is very dedicated. I a couple of guys in the last band I was in told me that they believe that Jim Morrison is still alive and that he faked his own death and his body... They never revealed his body, and it's buried somewhere or his casket's buried somewhere in France, but he's living over there and all this stuff. And, you know, I was lucky enough to be in a band that opened for Robbie Krieger's band one time, but I never got to ask Robbie Krieger whether Jim Morrison was alive or not. So sorry, everybody. We still don't know whether or not Jim Morrison, whether he sends Robbie Christmas cards or anything of the sort.
Yeah, I mean, you know. I love The Doors. I have sang Doors karaoke.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they're a good band, you know. I agree with you in the sense that Morrison was an all right poet, you know. But
he was an all right poet. They were okay musicians, but
I think the Lizard King is a psychotic little mind-bending drug trip.
Yeah.
I don't really think there's anything more to the Lizard King than that.
No, but if you were to follow the Doors movie that Stone did, it was like...
He was a genius.
He was a genius and a metaphysical god. I mean, it's...
Well, folks, after you get done watching the metaphysical god movie, rent No Direction Home, the Bob Dylan documentary. There's a real genius for you.
There you go.
So...
All right, let's call this one done.
All right. Good times. Started with U93, ended on Morrison.
Hey, good enough for me.
All right, everybody.
Let's, well, hell, they know how to get a hold of us. And if not, look at the show notes from episode 16, because there's enough of them.
They're pretty thorough.
There you go.
.com. You know the day destroys the night. The night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side. Break on through. Oh, oh yeah!